This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Wong Xiaoning. It's 7:35 in the morning, Tuesday the 24th of March. And in about half an hour, we're going to be having the breakfast grill. It's a very interesting guest this morning because Khoo Soo Chong is going to be speaking with Liu Chin Tong, the former Deputy Minister of Defence.
That's right. He's going to discuss how we as Malaysians can together respond to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic with resilience and preparedness. And so Chuang is going to gauge his views on this.
So this is something that we're going to be tuning in to later on after the 8 o'clock news bulletin. But right now we are taking a look at the impact that COVID-19 is having on healthcare systems around the world. Because between 4 and 5% of infected patients are likely to require hospitalization, and some 30% of that number may in fact need intensive care, including invasive mechanical ventilation. So countries are in danger of seeing their public healthcare systems collapse once confirmed cases exceed the capacity of the system.
Take, for example, Italy, which which crumbled under the pressure despite having the 10th highest number of critical care beds in Europe. Now, an accurate assessment of a health system's surge capacity becomes even more relevant now as governments try to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic.
So to dive deeper into this, we have on the line with us Milena Izmirlieva, Life Sciences Director at IHS Market, to discuss the current limitations of the healthcare system as well as how to mitigate it. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Milena. In your current view, which countries are the most and least prepared to receive patients infected by the coronavirus, and how do you measure this?
So from their ranking, countries like Japan, South Korea, Germany and Austria are expected to do relatively well in saving the lives of patients that are critically ill with COVID-19. And this is based on simply the number of intensive care beds per capita. Countries that are close to the bottom, so that would be the UK, Sweden, Chile, Canada, Mexico, are likely to do worse in terms of saving lives. The US has slightly more beds per capita than the UK, but the issue we have to consider here as well is all of these global statistics that are available tend to focus on intensive care bed per 1,000. So the issue we've got with this virus is that you don't just need an intensive care bed. You need an intensive care bed that is equipped with a ventilator. And what we have seen is that countries may have more intensive care beds, but not all of them have ventilators. So for the UK, for example, we know the availability of beds is about 5,000 for intensive care, but not all of them are with ventilators. If you look at Germany, they've got 27,000 intensive care beds, but of them, more than 25,000 are equipped with ventilators. And you can see already that Germany seems to have a lower mortality rate than Italy, for example. However, we do know from Italian doctors, even a week ago, they were already saying the system cannot cope. We have to make decisions about who lives and who dies simply because we don't have enough beds with ventilators.
And what other aspect do you think that is often overlooked when measuring the health surge capacity?
The other issue that has been very little discussed, I think, so far in the media is the occupancy rate for hospital beds. So it's not just how many beds you've got, but how many of them are already occupied by other patients. So the UK is likely to do particularly bad in that regard, because even when you don't have a threat such as COVID-19, about 90% of beds are already occupied. We've had cases in the UK of patients awaiting surgery, and you've got teams of 15 surgeons and nurses and anesthetists, the patient already given the anesthetic, and the surgery stopped simply because the hospital doesn't have an intensive care bed for the post-surgical care of that patient. So you can imagine in a situation where you've got significant surge in demand for intensive care beds from COVID-19 patients, if already some of your intensive care beds are occupied, where are you going to put the new patients? And the flip side of that is, if suddenly all of your intensive care beds are going to the COVID-19 patients, what happens to the people with other diseases? What happens to people with heart attacks, or maybe people who are having life-saving surgery for cancer? and you don't have an intensive care bed for them. So all of these need to be considered. The bed occupancy rate needs to be particularly seriously considered. And there is no international database that provides data across countries for occupancy rates.
So what kind of quick measures can be taken to increase the healthcare surge capacity in countries facing difficulties in catering to the rise of COVID-19 patients then?
So short-term solution, obviously, would be to try and produce ventilators as quickly as you can. However, this may prove difficult. So we know for Italy, they do have one national supplier of ventilators, and the current capacity is 125 ventilators per month. So even if you dedicate all of the resources you can, they can increase capacity to 500 per month. So given the need and the demand for ventilators at the moment, even if you can supply another 500 per month, that would probably be insufficient. But each extra ventilator means potentially an extra life saved. So obviously, countries that want to boost the surge capacity of their healthcare system, they should be trying to produce ventilators or import ventilators as quickly as they can. The other issue is, normally you don't just plug ventilators into a socket. You do need to have oxygen supply to them. So if you're expecting a surge in cases in a couple of weeks or 3 weeks, there may still be time to turn potentially hotels or exhibition centers or schools into makeshift hospitals. If you don't have piped oxygen, the other option would be to have individual containers of oxygen. However, it's highly flammable, so you would need to have measures in place to make sure you don't have a fire in a hospital, particularly one of those makeshift hospitals, and the risk of that is higher. So the other issue is medical staff. It's not sufficient to have a bed and a ventilator. You do need to have highly trained intensive care nurses and doctors and respiratory specialists to look after COVID-19 patients. And that's the area where it's a bit more difficult to do something in 2 or 3 weeks because it takes years to train doctors. And then the other issue is, can you train maybe medical staff that are not in intensive care to start filling intensive care roles very quickly? And that's actually quite difficult because the doctors and nurses working in intensive care tend to be the most experienced you've got.
So at the rate of cases currently, quality will have to be sacrificed over quantity of services. In your view, what is an acceptable decline of quality in healthcare service?
Different healthcare systems are going to have different answers to that. So we have already seen in the United States some legislation being passed that the medical liability for doctors would be weakened during that period of time. So effectively, it means if there are severe complications that you wouldn't have otherwise, doctors would have some legal protection than compared to what would have been the case otherwise. The UK is considering similar things. And part of it is you're preparing for that decline in quality. Also, the UK has moved to suspend all elective surgical procedures in order to free up intensive care beds for COVID-19 patients. What it means is you've got people that otherwise would have been entitled to access the healthcare system who may be not severely ill, but potentially in severe pain. So you may have someone who's got who's due to have a hip replacement and they can barely walk, and that's impacting their well-being, their ability to exercise. Maybe that person now would have to wait for a year to have a hip replacement. So you are accept a decline in quality. The standards of care expected to be weaker. And I think it's an inevitable byproduct of having to generate more quantity of care.
Based on the data that you studied, are the suppression and mitigation measures currently in use effective in flattening the curve?
All of these measures, isolating patients who are at high risk, also trying to introduce social distancing, close schools and universities, all of these are actually mitigation measures. Suppression measures are much more serious, though. So these would be measures where you're basically shutting down the economy for a period of time. You stop people from going to work unless they are in one of those critical industries or critical sectors where you need production to continue. Whatever the economic cost, you cannot afford to do simply mitigation. You would have to do suppression and mitigation. And that requires shutting down the economy for specific periods of time. And that's the only way, really, that you can ensure you don't have a sudden surge in cases. Because if you do have that surge in cases and your capacity is to treat one of eight patients, That means the human cost in terms of lives lost would be unacceptably high, and that would have obviously implications for government stability, for the way, you know, people view their government and are likely to support the measures that are coming into place. So I think if anyone out there is hoping to just do mitigation and not have periods of suppression, they would discover that the mortality rate would be much, much, much higher.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Milena. That was Milena Izmirlieva, Life Sciences Director at IHS Market. Very interesting conversation there, because she shed some light on some interesting factors that I think we hadn't quite considered when it comes to things like the occupancy rates of hospitals, pointing out that the UK on a typical day without COVID-19 hanging over their heads is already at 90% occupancy. Then that means the room left for COVID-19 patients would be 10%. If you prioritized COVID-19 patients, it means that other patients with valid medical problems will find themselves without space in hospitals to go and get treated.
Yeah, also, I think it's not enough to just consider the headline statistics of beds per capita in a country. You need all the ancillary and peripheral services as well, like ventilators and so on. And those kinds of things need to be able to plug in to a power source to take care of these people. And right now, the healthcare systems, for example, in the UK, are breaking at the seams.
I think hopefully in the post-COVID-19 world, right, more attention will be paid in terms of healthcare budgets, right, rather than just looking at economic development. Healthcare is something that governments really need to seriously consider.
Yes, and right now, though, we are about to head into some messages. And up next, we'll be taking a look at business continuity in the time of COVID-19 with conversations with Michelle Kaithi Lim, CEO of the Institute of Corporate Directors, Malaysia. Keep it here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.